Five species make a watch list. This is the Environment Report. I'm Rebecca Williams. There are five new invasive species on the least wanted list. That's a list the Great Lakes, St. Lawrence governors and premiers puts together. The leaders of the eight states and two provinces on the lakes decide which species pose the highest risk. Sarah Lesage is on an invasive species task force for the group. She says the new species include a fish, a snail, and two plants that are already in the Great Lakes Basin, and a crayfish called marmor crab.
It's a crayfish that resulted from a genetic mutation that makes it possible for the crayfish to clone itself. It's a clonal organism that's made of females. So you can essentially start a new population with just one individual.
Lesage says the crayfish is not in the basin yet. She says there are now 21 species on the least wanted list. She says the list helps the states and provinces coordinate their regulations to try to keep the invaders in check. This is the Environment Report. A lot of cities have pledged to cut greenhouse gas emissions. That could mean things like cleaner buses or energy efficiency. But a sizable chunk of our carbon footprint can be traced to how we get and use our food. Eugene Moharab looked into the opportunity cities have to rethink their food systems. He's a lecturer in sustainable urban systems at the University of Reading in the UK, and he joins me by Skype. Thank you so much.
Hi, Rebecca. Thanks for having me.
You've looked at ways that cities can cut greenhouse gases through food consumption. Where do you see the greatest possibilities?
Well, there are a lot of possibilities all the way throughout the food system. We tend to think of food emissions being related to the production side, but as a matter of fact, a lot of the decisions associated with these emissions take place in cities by virtue of 80% of the U.S. population living in cities. If you start to consider choices in diet, the way that we purchase food, so from retail outlets, we look at the foods that require cold storage along the supply chain and transportation long distances, as well as just the disposal of food that we are either unable to eat or that just goes to waste. All these components within the food system and the decisions that are made within cities will dictate the greenhouse gas emission total.
When you look at the big picture, how does that shake out?
So what we found was that around one third of all emissions can be attributed directly to the production side, so on the farm. But the remaining two thirds can be attributed to activities that are generally occurring within urban areas. That would include the emissions from food that is ultimately wasted within urban areas.
One thing that stood out to me was that you found that increasing urban agriculture on vacant land was not likely to cut emissions by much. Why was that?
So that was a surprise to us too. So looking at typical yields that we see in urban agriculture, and what we found was if you took half the vacant land in the U.S. and use it for urban agriculture, what you would end up doing is producing enough produce that would offset roughly 17% of all the production that's required within U.S. cities, which is, from our eyes, quite substantial. But when you consider that those produce tend to be a very small fraction of the total food system's greenhouse gas emissions, there's really not a lot of gains to be realized by shifting the agriculture from centralized large-scale production to more disaggregated small-scale production.
Eugene Moharab is with the University of Reading in the UK. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much, Rebecca.
That's the Environment Report. I'm Rebecca Williams.